You're listening to the Matt Mercer Live Radio Network.
Matt Mercer Live. Imparting wisdom to the masses on a daily basis.
Matt Mercer Live.
Get ready, America.
It's time
for Matt Mercer Live. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome, Jacksonville, North Florida, and realms beyond. You're listening to Matt Mercer Live, broadcasting in 100,000 watts of radio power from News 104.5 WOKV's Hallowed Studios here in Jacksonville, Florida. I am attorney Matt Mercer, your host for the next half hour during your dinner time drive. You know, every week it's like a beautiful, beautiful day, beautiful weather when I'm going to be on the air live, and I love it. I get to be in here. You guys are outside listening and hopefully soaking it all in, soaking in the weather, enjoying it as we help you make sense out of the law. I've got a number of things I'm going to talk about tonight. First of all, I'm going to talk about a contract clause that I get asked about a lot. We're going to also talk about how to hire a lawyer. I've got some ideas for you guys, whether you're listening here in Jacksonville, North Florida, Orlando, Tampa. How do you find a lawyer? What do you look for? What are the qualities? How do you know when you're getting a good lawyer versus a mediocre lawyer? We're going to cover that as well. And the other thing I want to talk about tonight, as we help you make sense out of the law, is this idea of unjust enrichment. Unjust enrichment. We'll talk about it. First of all, the contract clause of the day that I want to share with you is this concept called automatic renewal. Now, depending on the type of contract that you or your business uses, for example, let's suppose that you have a business and you need to hire a company to print and mail statements or something like that. Maybe you have an investment firm or a bank or something like that. Whatever service contract your business may need, oftentimes what you'll see is an initial term of, say, 1, 2, or 3 years. Okay, pretend that you're the customer and you're reading over this contract or this proposal and you see this clause. It's often titled auto renewal or automatic renewal. What is that? Well, as I always say here on Matt Mercer Live, there is no such thing as standard terms and conditions, right? Every contract provision, whether it's a proposal, whether it's a purchase agreement, a service agreement, a vendor contract, a construction contract, the terms and conditions, the T's and C's are there for a reason. So be careful. Don't just assume that they're standard terms because they aren't. Now, automatic renewal or clause of the day, this can be very beneficial in some cases. What does it mean? Generally, what it means is that that contract that you're under or your business is under, okay, could be a consumer contract. It basically means that at the end of the initial term, it's going to automatically renew for a successive term. And oftentimes you see these things worded as, I'll just rattle one off the top of my head, this agreement shall automatically renew, you know, for a successive 3-year term unless either party gives written notice of non-renewal to the other party not later than 90 days prior to the expiration of the then current term. That's just rattled right off the top of my head. You often see them worded that way. Let's break it down. If you're under a contract where, or you're about to sign a contract where the provision is in there and you don't want it in there, I'm going to give you a little trick, a little secret here of how to work around it. Because sometimes the other side, the vendor who wants you to sign that contract for a 3-year term, they don't want to take out the automatic renewal clause. They don't want you to mess with their form. They want you to just sign it. You, on the other hand, you may not want the contract to automatically renew. And what that means is that if you fail to give notice of non-renewal to the other side in writing in just the right manner within a certain time frame, it can't be any later often than a certain time frame, then guess what? That 3-year contract may automatically renew for another 3 years. Ouch. Now, if you've got such a sweetheart of a deal, you know, where you as the consumer, the customer, your business is procuring a service, I mentioned print and mail services, it could be any service, where you've got great pricing, great terms, You have an escalator clause that's reasonably capped so the prices can't go up every year too much. You may not mind an automatic renewal. You might think, gosh, gee whiz, yeah, let's let it automatically renew. And remember, it's counting on, automatic renewal clauses are counting on the inherent forgetfulness of you and me. That's what they're designed for. Most people are not going to have the discipline in a 2-year or 3-year contract to remember that 90 days before the end of that 3-year term that they're supposed to give written notice of non-renewal. Most people are going to forget. And that's what they're counting on. So if you're on the provider side, if your business is providing widgets, you're manufacturing or you're importing and you're distributing widgets, and you've got companies that are under requirements contracts purchasing your widgets, you might like the idea of an automatic renewal, right? Now, how do you get around it? If the other side won't agree to strike it on the front end, you're negotiating the terms or your lawyer's negotiating the terms, and they say, you know, we have to leave the automatic renewal in there. It's part of our standard terms. Fine. If everything else is acceptable and a reasonable allocation of risk under that contract, have a lawyer take a look at it. Go ahead and sign it if your lawyer gives you the green light, and then you can turn around after the ink dries and give them notice of non-renewal. Most of the time, you don't have to wait until that last 100 days or whatever the term is to give notice. Just give it on the front end. I had to do that once. I had a commercial phone contract with a major, well-known, somewhat monopolistic in reputation phone provider. I won't say the name. And it had that same sort of a provision, the commercial phone service contract for this many years and automatically renews, blah, blah, blah. Couldn't get that out. So we signed the contract and then we turned around and immediately faxed in and sent in a certified letter saying this is notice of non-renewal. Much gnashing of teeth by them after that, because then we weren't stuck with having to remember that 3 years. That's automatic renewal. Now let's switch gears. One of the most important things is having a decent, competent lawyer. And what I tell people is when I get asked occasionally, friends or folks will ask, I'm looking for a lawyer in this area of law. Do you know any? And the truth of the matter is oftentimes we can make a referral to somebody if they're needing a lawyer in a practice area that's different than what we do at Mercer Law. Okay? Think about it sort of like medicine. I'm going to give you some pointers, some suggestions for finding a good lawyer if you need one. Maybe you want to just have one for your business, or if you're a consumer, maybe you've just been served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or you've just been served with some court papers or a subpoena, and you need to have a lawyer take a look at it. Let's start with this premise. The practice of law is a lot like medicine. There are different areas of focus. And people are often surprised by that because they assume that, you know, when they start talking about a criminal law case and you don't do criminal law, you do civil law. And I know we have a lot of lawyers and law students who listen to the show. They're very specialized areas. We're not allowed to call them specialties, but for entertainment purposes, they are very specialized different areas. So the first thing you need to do in terms of how to find a lawyer is you've got to find one and specifically interview the lawyer. You need to meet with her or him. I would meet with them in person, unless you're geographically so distant that a phone call is all you can do. And you need to specifically ask this question. How much experience do you have handling this exact type of case, whatever that type is? And that slices on two different levels. One, how many years have they been practicing law? Are they right out of law school? Have they been practicing at least 10 years? There's a litmus for me. If I'm going to refer somebody, a client or a friend or a colleague who asks for a referral to a different practice area than what we practice at Mercer Law, I want to refer them to somebody that has a baseline of experience, at least a decade, practicing law. In most cases, there could be exceptions. The second thing, though, is even if the person's been practicing law for 20 years, that's not necessarily enough. Have they ever, with respect to your issue, the question you need to ask them is, have they ever handled a case like that? Or is this the first time that they're going to be handling that particular type of case? Maybe they've handled 1,000 personal injury cases, but now you're coming to them with a case involving a fight with your contractor, your builder, or a fight with their condo association, right? You want to ask the question, just be direct. Hey, about how many cases in this exact area specifically have you handled yourself? Not your firm, not the legacy and the former of counsels who have retired 20 years ago, but you, if you're going to be the attorney who's going to be primarily handling this type of case, how many of these have you handled? It's important. Because if they have not handled something in that area, you may want to ask, is there another lawyer in the firm that they will be working with that can all that does have a lot of experience handling those types of cases? All right. That's important. Never, ever assume that because the lawyer that you're thinking about hiring, and again, these are suggestions, but never assume that just because they've passed the bar exam that they are necessarily at the top of, you know, the ability to handle this type of case. If you came to me and asked me to handle a divorce case, I would just say, no way, not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. We don't do family law at Mercer Law. We handle a lot of different cases, civil cases, business cases, etc. They're all on our website, but I'm not going to touch a family law case. So if you were to ask me that question, how many of these have you handled? I would be very direct, very quickly, very candid, and say, we don't do those. So I think it's really important because there are some lawyers who I think they want to help, and sometimes they take on cases that maybe they don't have a lot of experience in. And of course, you know, they've got to get experience somewhere. I mean, every lawyer at some point has their first case if they practice eventually, right? They have to start somewhere. But you have to decide if the case that you have something that lends itself to having somebody with experience. You know, if somebody only has 3 years of practice experience, but they've handled your type of case 25 times, that might be good, right? So it's not an absolute sort of a thing. These are just different factors to take into account. The other thing I want you to consider as you're thinking about where to find a lawyer, consider the source of where you're getting the lawyer's name. So you have it. Let's say you're listening. You're in Tampa, or you're in Orlando, or here in Jacksonville, where we're broadcasting from. Are you getting the information from something you came across on a Facebook ad, or are you getting it from the phone book? Are you getting it from the internet, just a Google search or a search engine search? How are you finding the name of the lawyer that you're thinking about? Because sometimes that can be very, very important. You know, if you were, let me put it to you this way. I'm going to give you a little inside scoop. If you, the listener, were going to have surgery, would you want to find your surgeon by doing a quick Google search? No, you probably wouldn't, right? What would you do? You would contact some of your friends. You would say, hey, who has had this similar condition, the similar surgery? Who's good? Who handles this well? Who's got experience? Who's competent? Very competent, right? When it comes to surgery, it can be very important. So you want to find good, experienced, qualified surgeon, right? Same approach, I would suggest, you can use in terms of trying to find a lawyer. Ask people, if you're a business owner and you're looking to have a lawyer that you can sort of keep on retainer, just sort of have when you have legal questions or proposals or issues that pop up from time to time, you just want to be able to pick up the phone or go meet with the lawyer and say, I've got a lawyer. How do you find that person? You should ask other business owners. Who do you guys use? Who do you recommend? Who's effective, right? That's important. I also like, when I interview lawyers, I love asking a couple of questions. One question I always ask is, where did you graduate in your law school class? Where did you graduate in your class? Are you in the top third? Are you in the bottom third? You know, the old adage, what did you call the person who finished at the bottom of their medical school class? The answer, we all know, you call them doctor. That's true. But I got to tell you, if I'm going to have surgery at some point, I don't want that person necessarily. They might end up turning out to be great, but in a relative field of competition, when I interview lawyers to work at my firm, Mercer Law, I want to know where they graduated in their class. I don't care about their GPA because maybe they went to one of these law schools that had, you know, very, very high GPAs. They give out lots of A's. other law schools grade on a different curve, the GPA is somewhat useless. But in a field of competition, if you had 125 people in your law school graduating class, when I ask you in an interview, where did you finish in your class? If you know, that tells me something. If you say, you know, I'm not really sure, that tells me something too. Because competitive people, and believe me, I think having a lawyer who is competitive is very, very important. When I'm interviewing candidates, if they don't strike me as being strategic or they don't seem competitive, if they tell me they don't know where they finished in their law school class relative to the field of competition, that's significant to me, and it's not favorable. I'm not going to hire them. Now, if they say they don't know, it may mean that they didn't care to ask because it's not something they just necessarily publish. Typically in law school, grades are posted. You have to go to the dean's office to ask for your rank. Okay? It's not something that they necessarily put on the wall. If you don't know, you don't know. Maybe you didn't care. That tells me something. So ask, when you're interviewing a lawyer in that initial consultation, ask them, hey, where did you finish in your law school class? What was your class rank? See if they know, because the ones that did well, and how do I define well? I would say your top third. If you're finished in the top third, that's good. Well, more to come. This is attorney Matt Mercer. You're listening to Matt Mercer Live. Got some important messages. We will be right back.
Unmitigated talk radio excellence. You're listening to Matt Mercer Live. Matt Mercer Live.
Matt Mercer Live.
Listen a lot to learn a lot. You're listening to Matt Mercer Live with your host, Matt Mercer. Get ready, America. It's time for Matt Mercer Live.
Live. I am your host, attorney Matt Mercer of Mercer Law. By the way, meant to mention at the top of the show a couple of ways you can connect. And I want to share, if you grab your pen, I'll share the email address for the show. You can send in your questions 24/7. A lot of times I'll get an email from somebody in the middle of the week. Something pops up, a consumer issue, a business law issue, a litigation issue, and you can email it. Here's the email address, wokv@mercerfirm.com. That's MERCERFIRM.com. And set that up in your smartphone, by the way. So as you're driving down the road, you can pull over safely, email that question in. We love getting emails. By the way, I always tell people, mention where you're from. Just give us a city and a state. I know some people listen live on the internet. It's always nice to know where the questions are coming from. So let's move into the substance of law. What did we cover at the top of the show? Well, we covered how to hire a lawyer, and we covered one other item. Where were we? We were with auto renewal, the clause of the day. Now, we want to go into the substance of law. I mentioned at the top of the show we would touch base on unjust enrichment. This is a claim that I use a lot here in Florida. So the situations where you have a contract and somebody breaches, that's obvious. We bring a lawsuit for breach of contract against the other party on your behalf, or if you've been sued for breaching a contract. But sometimes the facts are not quite as clear. What if one of the essential components to a contract is never really discussed or agreed upon? Think of a hypothetical. Your facts may be different, but imagine if somebody, a handyman, says he'll come over and install a new sink in your kitchen. Price was never really discussed. You say, hey, that sounds great. He comes over, he faithfully installs the sink, does a wonderful job, and then sends you a bill for $17,000. Wow. Okay, that's obviously excessive. Maybe if you're listening from New York City, that would be a reasonable price, but certainly not here in North Florida and Jacksonville. That's ridiculous. You can imagine, though, in that hypothetical, there is a lot of room for not having a meeting of the minds. Maybe the parties agree to the performance of a particular task, like installing a sink or adding a room onto a house, or maybe, hey, I'm going to pick up your car on Friday and, you know, we'll settle up the payment later. The price isn't discussed. That's really the central situation where, for whatever reason, there wasn't clarity on the price, or maybe there was some back and forth and on the price, and maybe it was, well, we'll work that out later. And then one party performs and then wants to get paid. And you're like, whoa, I never agreed to that. That is the classic situation where we can bring a lawsuit for unjust enrichment. Unjust enrichment would mean you were the person who provided the widget or provided the service, where maybe one of the essential elements of the contract hadn't been resolved. Typically price, by the way, but not always. Could be for some other reason the contract theory fails. So we can't sue the guy that didn't pay you. We can't sue them for breach of contract, but I can sue him or her or that other company for unjust enrichment. And it's simply a suit that says, hey, we've conferred some benefit on you, the other side, the defendant. You've received and retained that benefit, and it would be unjust for you to do so without us getting some fair compensation. How do those play out in court? Very, very simply. The court is not going to require you, the defendant, to pay $17,000 because, again, that had never been bargained for or agreed to. What the courts will do here in Florida, typically, is they'll award fair market value. So if the fair market value of installing a sink is, say, I don't know, $200, if that's what the experts say, or $400, you make up the price, depending on what part of the state you're in. Your expert says $400, the other side says $200. Judge may decide to go right in the middle, right, and pick something in between. It's a fair market value award. Obviously, you're not going to take the time to bring a lawsuit for something as small as installing a sink. So I use that as a silly example, but obviously you can take the circumstances to a higher level. It's also a great tool. Unjust enrichment can be a great tool. Let me give you another context. Let's say you are a material supplier in construction jobs. You provide the construction materials that laborers and subs and others use to improve people's real property, build buildings or houses. You're the material supplier. You have no contract with the owner, right? Because you sell your materials to who? To the subs, to the GC maybe. So that's who your contract's with. Now, if your materials are used to benefit the owner and you don't get paid, guess what? The GC doesn't pay you. You might, in many cases, have a claim against the owner even though you never had a contract with them. That's right. Now, there's a few nuances here in Florida. If the owner hasn't paid their GC, you may well have a claim. If the owner has paid the GC in full and the GC just hasn't paid down to you, that's a little different. Case by case, but I wanted to share with you on the substantive law point, our topic tonight, unjust enrichment. Yet another claim. Think of the arrows in the quiver, so to speak, that we've got that we can use to help solve your problems. All right. I'm attorney Matt Mercer. We're going to touch base on one more topic. We won't get very far into it. Well, there's the ending music. I'll have to save it for next week. It's the idea of, what if you've moved to Florida and a judgment from where you came from is chasing you here in Florida? We'll cover that next week. I'm attorney Matt Mercer. Check us out on the web at mercerfirm.com. That's mercerfirm.com.
Matt Mercer Live, helping you get even smarter.